and welcome to Learning English Weekend, the Saturday edition. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz in Washington. Katie Weaver is off this week. She'll be back next Saturday. It's April 9th, 2016. It was on this day in 2009 in Tbilisi, Georgia, that as many as 60,000 people gathered in protests against the government of Mikhail Saakashvili. Now, here's what's ahead on today's program. On In the News, we will tell you about the law firm that is at the center of the growing scandal called the Panama Papers. What is the firm accused of? And how is it reacting to the charges? We'll tell you today. Then on American Mosaic, we'll take you to a rodeo in the state of Texas, where kids are competing to win cattle. Then, as we always do on the Saturday edition of Learning English Weekend, we will tell you an American story. This week, our story is The Cask of Amontillado by the mystery writer Edgar Allan Poe. So, you can see, as always, we have a lot for you today. Every day of the year, we bring you news from and about America and the world. And every Saturday, we tell you an American story. We are a little different here at VOA Learning English. Because we exist to help you learn everyday American English, we speak a little slower than normal, and we use words that are easy to understand. Listen to the program, then practice saying the words and sentences the way we do. It's a free and easy way to improve your American English skills every day of the year. We're on the radio, on the web, and we come to you on a podcast. We are wherever you are. We're the voice of America. For nearly 40 years, a law firm in Panama helped drug dealers, criminals, corrupt politicians, sports stars, and billionaires avoid paying taxes. A group of investigative journalists said the Mossack Fonseca law firm has helped people from more than 200 countries and territories hide their money. Those named include 12 current and former world leaders. Among them are the prime ministers of Iceland and Pakistan, the president of Ukraine, and the king of Saudi Arabia. Others are family members of Chinese leaders, associates of the Russian president, Mexican drug gang leaders, people linked to terrorist groups and Iran and North Korea, and FIFA officials. The Mossack Fonseca law firm was created in Panama in 1986 when Jürgen Mossack, who was born in Germany in 1948, and Ramon Fonseca, who was born in Panama in 1952, combined their two law firms. Mossack Fonseca is a global company that provides legal services and helps rich people and companies manage their money. It creates and operates companies in Switzerland, Britain, Hong Kong, the British Virgin Islands, and Malta. It also operates in the American states of Nevada and Wyoming. The International Consortium of Investigative Journalists, or ICIJ, said the firm is one of the largest providers of these services. The journalists group reported that the firm has more than 500 employees and collaborators in more than 40 offices around the world, including 3 in Switzerland and 8 in China. The ICIJ said the firm earned more than $42 million in 2013. After the release of the leaked documents known as the Panama Papers, Mossack Fonseca said it acted responsibly and obeyed international laws. In a statement, the firm said, "The companies we incorporate are not being used for tax evasion, money laundering, terrorist financing, or other illicit purposes." But the firm said, "We regret any misuse of our services and actively take steps to prevent it." The firm told the Washington Post newspaper that it follows both the letter and spirit of financial laws, which it notes are different throughout the world. It said that in almost 40 years of operation, it has never been charged with criminal acts. Ramon Fonseca told the French news agency AFP that the leaking of the information is a crime, a felony. Privacy is a fundamental human right that is being eroded more and more in the modern world. Each person has a right to privacy, whether they are a king or a beggar. In an hour-long interview on the WhatsApp messaging service, Mr. Fonseca said, "At the end of this storm, the sky will be blue again, and people will find that the only crime is the hacking of the firm's documents," the New York Times newspaper reported. The newspaper also reported that in an email to Mr. Fonseca and others in the firm, Mr. Mossack blamed the firm's employees in London for not investigating the backgrounds of people the firm helped. He said they were not doing their due diligence thoroughly, or maybe none at all. The ICIJ is a nonprofit group based in Washington, D.C. More than a year ago, the ICIJ was given 11.5 million documents taken from the law firm. The group did not tell who gave it the documents or why. It worked with the German newspaper Süddeutsche Zeitung and more than 100 other news organizations, including VOA Zimbabwe, to create the reports. Putting money in banks in other countries is not always illegal. But the ICIJ says the documents show that banks, law firms, and others have often failed to follow legal requirements that they make sure their clients are not involved in criminal acts, illegal tax avoidance, or political corruption. Michael Hudson is a senior editor at ICIJ. He told VOA, "This is really the shadow side of our global economy, the money that flows around mostly unchecked, undetected." You can't say in every single case that someone is doing something wrong or that they're hiding improper practices. But it certainly raises lots of questions about transparency when you have politicians, and especially top leaders of countries, moving their holdings offshore and using offshore entities to obscure what they're doing. Cowboys and cowgirls from across the United States were in Houston, Texas recently for the Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo. The Houston Rodeo is one of the biggest shows of its kind in the world. The yearly event gives children who live in cities a chance to see farm animals up close. It also gives children from rural areas a chance to show off animals they have fed and cared for. With more, here's Ann Ball with this week's American Mosaic.
One of the most popular activities at the rodeo is called the calf scramble. Young people chase a calf and try to catch the animal with a rope. Winners of the event are given $2,000 to use to buy a cow that they can raise and exhibit at the show next year. Hannah Lisenby lives on a small farm near Fort Worth, Texas. She told VOA she hoped to win the event.
We don't really have the money to just dive into the cattle business on our own, and I thought the calf scramble would be a great way to get in there and give me the opportunity to have my own cattle.
Many of those who took part in the calf scramble live on farms, but children who live in and near big cities also compete. In Texas, many school systems have farms where students, even those from cities, can care for animals. Alexa Vasquez lives near Houston. She won a calf scramble in a previous rodeo.
I'm going to be raising a heifer, which I've never done before, which I'm actually pretty excited.
She said that caring for an animal has helped her decide what kind of work she wants to do.
It kind of inspires me a little bit, kind of makes me want to work hard, and maybe one day probably be a veterinarian.
Bryson Bassinger grew up in farm country near the Texas border with Oklahoma. He says that is where he plans to live his life.
I wouldn't choose anything else. I couldn't live in the city. I'd rather have cows than people around me.
I'm Ann Ball.
Thanks, Ann. Now, if it's Saturday, it's time for an American story. Shep O'Neill is here to introduce this week's story, which will be presented by Larry West.
Our story today is called The Cask of Amontillado. It was written by Edgar Allan Poe. Here is Larry West with the story.
Fortunato and I both were members of very old and important Italian families. We used to play together when we were children. Fortunato was bigger, richer, and more handsome than I was. And he enjoyed making me look like a fool. He hurt my feelings 1,000 times during the years of my childhood. I never showed my anger, however, so he thought we were good friends. But I promised myself that one day I would punish Fortunato for his insults to me. many years passed. Fortunato married a rich and beautiful woman who gave him sons. Deep in my heart, I hated him. But I never said or did anything that showed him how I really felt. When I smiled at him, he thought it was because we were friends. He did not know it was the thought of his death that made me smile. Everyone in our town respected Fortunato. Some men were afraid of him because he was so rich and powerful. He had a weak spot, however. He thought he was an excellent judge of wine. I also was an expert on wine. I spent a lot of money buying rare and costly wines. I stored the wines in the dark rooms under my family's palace. Our palace was one of the oldest buildings in the town. The Montresor family had lived in it for hundreds of years. We had buried our dead in the rooms under the palace. These tombs were quiet, dark places that no one but myself ever visited. Late one evening, during carnival season, I happened to meet Fortunato on the street. He was going home alone from a party. Fortunato was beautiful in his silk suit, made of many colors, yellow, green, purple, and red. On his head he wore an orange cap, covered with little silver bells. I could see he had been drinking too much wine. He threw his arms around me. He said he was glad to see me. I said I was glad to see him, too, because I had a little problem. "What is it?" he asked, putting his large hand on my shoulder. "My dear Fortunato," I said, "I'm afraid I have been very stupid. The man who sells me wine said he had a rare barrel of Amontillado wine. I believed him, and I bought it from him. But now I'm not so sure that the wine is really Amontillado."
"What?" he said. "A cask of Amontillado at this time of year? An entire barrel? Impossible." "Yes, I was very stupid. I paid the wine man the full price he wanted, without asking you to taste the wine first. But I couldn't find you, and I was afraid he would sell the cask of Amontillado to someone else. So I bought it."
"A cask of Amontillado?" Fortunato repeated. "Where is it?"
I pretended I didn't hear his question. Instead, I told him I was going to visit our friend Lucchese. "He will be able to tell me if the wine is really Amontillado," I said. Fortunato laughed in my face.
"Lucchese cannot tell Amontillado from vinegar."
I smiled to myself and said, "But some people say that he is as good a judge of wine as you are." Fortunato grabbed my arm.
"Take me to it," he said. "I'll taste the Amontillado for you."
"But, my friend," I protested, "it is late. The wine is in my wine cellar, underneath the palace. Those rooms are very damp and cold, and the walls drip with water."
"I don't care," he said. "I am the only person who can tell you if your wine man has cheated you. Lucchese cannot."
Fortunato turned, and still holding me by the arm, pulled me down the street to my home. The building was empty. My servants were enjoying carnival. I knew they would be gone all night. I took two large candles, lit them, and gave one to Fortunato. I started down the dark, twisting stairway with Fortunato close behind me. At the bottom of the stairs, the damp air wrapped itself around our bodies.
"Where are we?" Fortunato asked. "I thought you said the cask of Amontillado was in your wine cellar."
"It is," I said. "The wine cellar is just beyond these tombs where the dead of my family are kept."
"Surely you are not afraid of walking through the tombs?"
He turned and looked into my eyes.
"Tombs?" he said.
He began to cough. The silver bells on his cap jingled. "My poor friend," I said, "how long have you had that cough?"
"It's nothing," he said.
But he couldn't stop coughing. "Come," I said firmly, "we will go back upstairs. Your health is important. You are rich, respected, admired, and loved. You have a wife and children. Many people would miss you if you died. We will go back before you get seriously ill. I can go to Lucrezia for help with the wine."
"No," he cried. "This cough is nothing. It will not kill me. I won't die from a cough."
That is true," I said. "But you must be careful." He took my arm, and we began to walk through the cold, dark rooms. We went deeper and deeper into the cellar. Finally, we arrived in a small room. Bones were pushed high against one wall. A doorway in another wall opened to an even smaller room, about 1 meter wide and 2 meters high. Its walls were solid rock. "Here we are," I said. "I hid the cask of Amontillado in there." I pointed to the smaller room. Fortunato lifted his candle and stepped into the tiny room. I immediately followed him. He stood stupidly staring at two iron handcuffs chained to a wall of the tiny room. I grabbed his arms and locked them into the metal handcuffs. It took only a moment. He was too surprised to fight me. I stepped outside the small room.
"Where is the Amontillado?" he cried.
"Ah, yes," I said. "The cask of Amontillado." I leaned over and began pushing aside the pile of bones against the wall. Under the bones was a basket of stone blocks, some cement, and a small shovel. I had hidden the materials there earlier. I began to fill the doorway of the tiny room with stones and cement. By the time I laid the first row of stones, Fortunato was no longer drunk. I heard him moaning inside the tiny room for 10 minutes. Then there was a long silence. I finished the second and third rows of stone blocks. As I began the fourth row, I heard Fortunato begin to shake the chains that held him to the wall. He was trying to pull them out of the granite wall. I smiled to myself and stopped working so that I could better enjoy listening to the noise. After a few minutes, he stopped. I finished the fifth, the sixth, and the seventh rows of stones. The wall I was building in the doorway was now almost up to my shoulders. Suddenly, loud screams burst from the throat of the chained man. For a moment, I worried. What if someone heard him? Then I placed my hand on the solid rock of the walls and felt safe. I looked into the tiny room, where he was still screaming, and I began to scream too. My screams grew louder than his, and he stopped. It was now almost midnight. I finished the 8th, the 9th, and the 10th rows. All that was left was a stone for the last hole in the wall. I was about to push it in when I heard a low laugh from behind the stones. The laugh made the hair on my head stand up. Then Fortunato spoke in a sad voice that no longer sounded like him. He said, "Well, you have played a good joke on me. We will laugh about it soon over a glass of that Amontillado. But isn't it getting late? My wife and my friends will be waiting for us. Let us go." "Yes," I replied, "let us go." I waited for him to say something else. I heard only my own breathing. "Fortunato," I called. No answer. I called again. "Fortunato." Still no answer. I hurried to put the last stone into the wall and put the cement around it. Then I pushed the pile of bones in front of the new wall I had built. That was 50 years ago. For half a century now, no one has touched those bones. May he rest in peace.
You have just heard the story, The Cask of Amontillado. It was written by Edgar Allan Poe and adapted for Special English by Donna DeSanctis. Your storyteller was Larry West. This is Shep O'Neill.
Our thanks to Shep O'Neill and Larry West. And that's our program for today. We hope it has informed and entertained you and has helped you learn everyday American English. You can read and listen to the stories that you've heard on today's program on our website, learningenglish.voanews.com. Next week, we will present another in-depth look at an important news story. We'll tell you about people, places, and things in the United States in our American Mosaic Report. And, as always, we will tell you an American story. That's all next Saturday with Katie Weaver, so don't miss it. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz reporting from Washington. I'll be back tomorrow at this same time to help you learn everyday American English. We'll tell you why an increasing number of American college students are leaving the U.S. to study. Anna Mateo will be here with her popular Words and Their Stories program. And we will take you back to 1918, the year World War I ended and difficult diplomatic negotiations between the former enemies began. I hope you'll listen tomorrow to Learning English Weekend, the Sunday edition, a broadcast, webcast, and podcast from The Voice of America.